Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique jivome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician.
Namaste, and welcome to another episode with the Holistic Health Podcast. Today, we're talking touch therapy, and this is particularly, I think, apropos, just given that we have COVID going on, and maybe a lot of us have missed touching, whether it's family members or hugging or shaking hands or just other friends. There's this social distancing that we've been doing, and I think maybe what we wanted to be doing was, you know, physical distancing, but then with that comes this lack of touch. But today, we have an expert, and I'm really excited to talk to her. And we're going to be focusing on touch therapy. And so my guest today is Leslie Korn. And Dr. Korn specializes in nutritional and integrative medicine for the treatment of depression, anxiety, insomnia, PTSD, chronic digestive problems. You can see she has quite a robust area that she covers. She's been in private practice for over 40 years. She was a clinical fellow at Harvard Medical School. And she was funded and did work on polarity research and I think polarity therapy. And so she's going to give us a bit of insight into touch therapy. She now lives in the jungles of Mexico, where she's been working for 25 years. So a really fascinating set of circumstances that she's in now. I'm so excited. I want to welcome you to the podcast. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here. And so am I. Excited.
Yes. And so tell us what you're up to before we jump into touch therapy. What took you out from the urban center of Boston out to the jungles of Mexico? How did that happen?
Well, Raja, it must have been divine intervention.
I really,
in retrospect, when we look at our lives, we sometimes think we know what we're doing when in fact we're being guided. And that's what happened to me. As you can tell, I'm from Boston, from a very academic and scientific family. But I just had the love of nature. And so at 20, I dropped out of undergraduate school and hightailed it to the jungle of Mexico, not knowing what I was doing, but later realizing I was in for the adventure of my life and really the learning experience that ultimately led to a full career.
Yeah. And you know, what's really interesting about you is you have so many facets to what you do because you're licensed in mental health and you've also done work in functional nutrition. But today, I mean, for this podcast, we're talking touch. So tell me a little bit more about just what is the breadth of training that you've had and what's gotten you really into the area of touch therapy?
You know, touch therapy is what I trained in originally. I was very fortunate in my early undergraduate years to learn from a Chinese acupuncturist. And so I began studying acupuncture and acupressure. And then later I was introduced, actually when I was in Mexico, to polarity therapy, which is really a syncretic tradition that combines cranial osteopathy and Ayurvedic approaches to touch. And it's both energetically based, meaning you can have a very light, energetic, soothing touch, but also in the tradition of this tradition, you can also have a very deep touch. And the basic principle underlying all of it is that everything flows from energy. And illness, disruption of any sort of distress is a reflection of lack of that energy flow. And so we're taught how to identify blockages, areas where there's either too much flow or perhaps too little flow, and we're taught to balance that out. And the thing that really separates polarity from a variety of other traditions, I think, having studied a number of them, is that you adjust it to the need of your patient so that someone who is very anxious and hyperactive and really, you know, they feel like they're going to jump out of their skin if a pin drops, they need a very soothing, relaxing touch called the sattvic touch, whereas someone who's very rigid and immobile, muscle-bound, lots of tightness, they can't really stretch or touch their toes, they're the ones who benefit from a good solid elbow into this very rigid tissue called rajasic touch. And so the idea is that we're tuning in to the symptoms and the needs of our patients and really adjusting our approach to moving energy to what they need and benefit from.
I think your comment about the different sorts of touch is a really fascinating one. And I think for the first time, maybe from any of you that are listening, it's really going to clue into why some people like a deep massage or some people like light massage, but this is more than just massage. So I love the summary that you gave just about what is touch therapy. And it seems to, you know, incorporate so many different facets. Can you tell us a little bit about what is special about touch that you can't get from other therapies?
You know, since I began with touch, it became a ritual, a therapeutic ritual. And I've done, maybe 40, 50,000 hours of treatment. And so I learned a lot from my patients. And one of the things that I learned through working with people is the stories of their distress and what they held in their body came out in words. And they would often say, I could never find a way to talk about this. I've now experienced it in my body, and now I've got words to put to it. And that actually led me to the study of trauma and how it affects the mind and body. And so if we think about touch, I consider it, and I think it's well established, that it's the primary language of communication at birth. We roll around in the amniotic fluid, we are touched, the belly of the pregnant mother is touched, and one gives birth and one becomes activated through all the sensation of coming through the birth canal. And then what do? We hold, we rock. We're not speaking at this time, really. We may speak as parents, but all that the infant is taking in is the sensation of relaxed, focused, calming, soothing touch. And this is why we pat our babies on the bottom and we put our hand on their brachial plexus between the shoulder blades and we rock. We rock in a rhythm, right? Because we are rhythmic beings. And so we're always trying to reestablish rhythm. And as someone who's trained both in touch and words, I love the integration of it. But what I find is words without touch only goes just so far. And I suggest that we are all really carrying the template of our infancy with us throughout our lives. And that's why rocking and being patted on the bottom in a way that's appropriate as adults remains a healing form of communication.
God, what such important points that you're making. And how do you think this has now been, this dynamic of our interactions with each other has changed in the COVID pandemic era? What are we missing out on? And how can we try to reconnect with that? Even before getting to the therapy part of it, how much does it affect just day-to-day relationships when you can't engage in the touch that we normally would?
Oh, I think the effects are huge. Let's even consider the anxiety we experience from this unknown. Then we have physical separation, or perhaps if we're lucky, we're separated yet with our families and our four-footed or winged friends as well. But touch has a very powerful effect on synchronizing our energies. We help each other self-regulate our emotions and our rhythms by being in close proximity, by touching, by soothing. Even if it's a bump on the shoulder or being in proximity, we know that we emit energizing vibrations that I call somatic empathy. They're very complex psychobiological and psychophysiological exchanges that are nonverbal. And we help each other relax by being in this kind of close proximity, by touching each other, by holding hands, maybe even a simple hand massage. And so being separated is really saying to us, do not go near the people who are going to help you relax and self-regulate emotionally. And so this is a huge problem that we're facing, yet one that I would suggest we have some answers to as well.
Yeah, so then when we're thinking about touch therapy, maybe this is one way of reaching towards a solution, but you're right, you know, with the COVID pandemic, hopefully we're able to get through this and get back to a more touch-based interaction again. Now, when we're looking at different kinds of touch therapies that are out there, whether it's, like you mentioned, polarity therapy, you just went over a little bit of the Ayurvedic concepts with Rajasic and Sattvic, different sorts of touch. But then there's also Marma, which is another form in Ayurveda of touch. And then there's body work, there's massage, and you mentioned cranial osteopathy. What are the different kinds of touch therapies out there and how do they differ from each other?
There are so many types of therapies out there. And what I'm always saying to people is the best thing is to experiment with what feels good to you. So we've got our very light forms of touch like cranial osteopathy or cranial sacral therapy, polarity, Reiki, even some of the non-touch, healing touch, which was really developed by nurses who are our original therapeutic touchers in hospitals and in clinical settings. And then we've got a whole range of touch that are really focused on different body systems. So if we think of light energetic experiences, and those are ideal for people, maybe you don't want to take your clothes off. Maybe you don't like being rubbed with oil. Maybe you're very sensitive and you'll really benefit from just something very light. Maybe you're just dipping your toes into it and you're just going to be happy with a foot reflexology treatment because you're not sure how you feel about touch. And so we've got that whole end of the spectrum. Then we can talk about really kind of muscular massage. You know how you feel after a workout and you've built up a lot of lactic acid, which causes soreness. And it's a very positive response to exercising muscles. But massage actually enhances our workout. It helps release. We call milking the muscle. And that's where I call it. It hurts, but it feels good. It's not so deep that it makes you go ouch, but it's just like, oh, that I can really feel that. And it's really releasing a lot of the tension of the muscle. Then we've got fascial work, which gets into the very deep container of the body, really, that is so tight. And where we can have lots of scar tissue. And I'm sure you know from your work, when people develop scar tissue, it can be very painful. And how do we mobilize this? Now, another area that's very important and often little known is abdominal massage. I work with a lot of people with digestive problems. And one of the best things we can do is I not only teach people how to massage their own abdomen as a way of learning about their digestive system, but also you can go get a professional abdominal massage. And we have this in Ayurvedic and traditional medicine, but we also have it in occupational therapy and PT as well. And this very relaxing, and there we get a mind-body effect. And so now the other thing that if you haven't tried a treatment called Watsu, that's one of my favorites, WATSU. And it's a combination of the word shiatsu with water. And that's where you get into warm water. And remember, I mentioned amniotic fluid earlier. You get some floaties on your hands and your feet, and you're with a massage therapist, and you're floating in water as you're stretched and you're pushed and you're pulled very gently. And this is something for someone not only who loves water, but for people who need a lot of gentle movement. I use this a lot with people of terrible chronic pain who almost cannot get out of bed. Now, just one more thing, because you asked about Marma. I love the Marma points because these are very special energy points in the face and the neck that not only we can receive a professional treatment using aromatic oils, but we can also do these points for ourselves. And you can find a Marma chart. And there are wonderful points. Let's remember the third eye, which in Western medicine, we usually think of as accessing the pineal gland and governing spiritual life. We've got points above the eyebrows, which release shoulder tension, and of course, underneath the eyes, because often swelling there might reflect, you know, a little bit of stress or tension in the kidneys. And then, of course, we've got the Marma points on the cheekbones and along the jaw. And under stress, of course, we can be gritting our teeth and not sleeping well. So these are all ways we can also treat ourselves.
Yeah, and in fact, a lot of us will do self-soothing by touching some of these points just unconsciously. It's kind of inbuilt. In Ayurveda, they talk about this. And of course, Marma points, there's many of them over the entire body, but just even the face, there's so many points there. So I love the fact that you're highlighting that. Now, we've been talking about energetics. We've been talking about touch therapy. And there are so many factors that are involved in there, especially when we're thinking about, you know, what is the energetics and the science. But you've done a bit around the science of this, haven't you? You've done a little bit of research in this area. So can you give us a little bit of what's the research behind this, and give us a little bit of science behind touch therapy, not just the energetics of it?
I'd be happy to. And it really evolved from my observations when I was asking, well, what's really going on here? I was observing deep relaxation. I was observing a release of old traumas, and I wanted to really find a language for that. And so I was very fortunate to be funded by the National Institutes of Health to study this. And so let me just share with you a little of our findings, but also in general, the findings. We know that touch induces, meaning safe touch and therapeutic touch, induces something called parasympathetic dominance. And what that means is we go from the stress response in the autonomic nervous system to the relaxation response. And there are a number of things that can trigger that, but I find that touch is often the deepest root there. And you remember when I talked about patting the baby on the bottom? What we're doing when the baby is in distress or crying, they're going from a sympathetic activated response, and we're triggering the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, the other thing that we know happens during touch, as we go into deeper and deeper levels of relaxation, is we're triggering changes in the brain, where we can go from a beta state of the brain, beta dominance, when we're thinking and solving problems. And that's the mind that we often can't shut off, that we're trying to slow down with meditation or yoga, and touch helps that. So we get out of beta mind, we go into alpha state, we can go deeper into an alpha theta state, which again is deep relaxation. And indeed, we can often go into a delta state. And we've all had this experience where, you know, when you're just about to fall asleep and you can experience what's called hypnagogic imagery. You're kind of awake, you're kind of asleep, but you begin to see lots of healing images in your mind. And that is that state of delta right before we go to sleep. And we know that it's a very creative, integrative state. And many people, after they experience this, kind of come out of that with some answers to some problems that they were having. So physiologically, there's lots of changes. Now, biologically, we know that touch enhances what's called the endocannabinoid system. Indeed, there are some stretches in osteopathy, in chiropractic, and in polarity that are hypothesized to actually trigger a flush response in the cerebrospinal fluid that releases the endocannabinoids. And you hear in the word endocannabinoid the term cannabis, because we have our own internal cannabinoid system, as it were, that's right. Deeply relaxing. And then just one more thing about touch and what we know, and I'm going to bring in my favorite four-footed friends here, who I love to touch, dogs and cats, because we know from research that when we touch people we love, including our dogs or our cats, we release oxytocin, the love hormone, and that's why we feel so good. And when we gaze into our baby's eyes or our partner's eyes, our friend's eyes, even our dog's eyes, and they gaze back at us and we touch them and stroke them, they also release oxytocin. So it's just one big love fest, hormonally speaking.
I think there's no better way to put it than just that. I mean, I think that it's fun to think about the research. Now, in your particular research, you actually were funded by the NIH. Isn't that correct?
Yes, we were very fortunate. I wanted to understand how to help dementia family caregivers. I work for the Center for World Indigenous Studies as one of the hats that I wear. And we were very interested in the stress of chronic caregiving, meaning years of caring for a loved one, particularly someone with dementia, when often you're juggling school, work, raising a family, and yet you've got an elder to care for. And we know from the scientific research that it's very stressful. It leads to chronic diseases as a result of that stress much more quickly. It creates more insomnia, anxiety, and just lowers the quality of life. And so we partnered with several tribal communities in the Pacific Northwest, because that's our mandate, to support tribal communities and traditional indigenous medicine. And so we brought a protocol that we standardized to polarity therapy. Within these communities, we trained a variety of therapists, we did participatory research, and we collected both quantitative data along with qualitative data. And so what we found is we collected all kinds of self-reports. We collected cortisol levels, heart rate variability, which is a sign of autonomic stress. And we enrolled 50 dementia caregivers. It was a randomized clinical control trial. And at the end, we had statistically significant improvement in a reduction of stress, improvement of sleep, reduction of depression. Those were the three main findings. The other thing that was kind of an interesting side, I was very interested from my own clinical experience, having observed people's very deep, meaningful spiritual experiences during touch. And all of these approaches are, from my point of view, they're secular, they're therapeutic. And yet, when we relax and go into ourselves and deeply explore our inner being, whatever we call it, whether it's spirituality or a vision or an integrated sense of purpose, it doesn't matter. But what we found among the participants in the polarity research arm is that people had profound experiences of meaning, of purpose, of what their caregiving meant to them. And then the other thing that we found that we weren't looking for is that being touched in this way was kind of like charging their battery. They came back after several weeks and said, you know what? I haven't been able to get myself to exercise for months. I've been so exhausted, or I just haven't made time to do this. But now I'm taking care of myself better. And this was an important finding, because ultimately we do want to jumpstart our family members, ourselves, our patients, so that we can take care of ourselves better.
That's always a very nice bonus when you find things that were unexpected as part of your research. So taking it all together, Leslie, what are your main takeaway points and what would you like someone that is just listening in on this podcast to walk away with? What would be the kernel of knowledge that would be really important for them to know about touch therapy?
First of all, we all need touch throughout our lives. It's not just rocking infants. We need to rock our 4-year-olds, our 7-year-olds with a belly ache, our 14-year-olds who don't want anything to do with us but are anxious. We need to put them on their side, give them a pillow, and very gently put our hand between their shoulder blades, our other hand right at their lower back, and gently have them rock and breathe and help them relax and come back into their body. We need to rock our patients in distress. I'm a big believer in who really needs a therapeutic touch? The people who are suicidal, the people who are deeply depressed, the people who can't feel their bodies anymore because of that distress. So find every way possible to integrate therapeutic touch. And just one more thing, one of the things that came out of our research of caregivers is we then taught the caregivers how to give a very soothing hand massage with yummy aromatic oils. The scientific research says that the Melissa oil in particular, but we know sandalwood and cinnamon as well, is very soothing. And we taught the caregivers how to very gently massage the hands of their patients. They're basically one of their parents generally, to soothe them when they were getting agitated. And not only did that soothe them, but it reduced the level of agitation and therefore distress the caregiver felt. And so what I always say is that touching and healing another, we get those benefits as well. It's not just one way, it goes both ways. And so I think that's my corn kernel for you, as it were.
Well, I think that that kernel is really important. And actually, I was going to make that the last question, but actually, I think this incited another question for me because, you know, you talk about folks that need touch therapy. What about self-touch? And in Ayurveda, they talk about self-marma or self-abhyanga, which is a form of massage. But what can people do to start engaging into this whole experience of touch, even with themselves, so that they don't have to wait for someone else, especially in the current environment, maybe harder to get to someone while we get through what we have to get through. What about self-touch and what's a way that people can start with that?
Oh, I think it's a perfect way to start. You can use oil or you don't need oil. First of all, I actually have a body scan audio on my SoundCloud that you can go to. It's at no charge. And you can do a body scan that allows you to begin to listen to your body and where there's discomfort. Wherever you have discomfort, you can place your hand. For example, maybe you're feeling a little constipated. Find that area of tension and give it a little gentle massage. Maybe you've got a little bit of gas and you might give a gentle massage in the direction of peristalsis. Maybe, you know, like me, I'm on the computer all the time and my hands get a little stiff if I've been writing a new book and I want to just feel my thumb, you know, this very important point between the thumb and the forefinger that can get tight. And, you know, we can touch as a meditation, but don't hesitate to touch while you're on the phone, talking to a friend or watching television or listening to your podcast. There are so many parts of the body we can touch. You can do a really soothing foot soak with some wonderful Epsom salts and lavender oil, dry your feet, and then just put your foot up on the couch and give yourself a foot massage or do it for someone in your family. I think you can't go wrong. That's the important thing, is follow the story your body's asking you to pay attention to and touch those areas of distress or pain.
Leslie, that's a great way to kind of put everything in perspective. And hopefully this will inspire some people to start with self-touch right after they're finished listening to us. Before we wrap up here, can you give us an idea of where can we find you What is a good website or social media handle that we could look at to learn more about what you're doing?
Sure. I've got two websites. One is drleslycorn.com, and there you've got lots of blogs and link to videos and audios and my books and also my clinical contact information. And then I have a site where I teach courses online for both non-professionals and professionals, and that's institute at drleslycorn.com. So both of those. Now, for those of your listeners who are interested in Indigenous studies and Native affairs, traditional medicine, I also have a website that's the organization I work with called CWIS.org, Center for World Indigenous Studies. And, you know, in all of these websites, we've got information on COVID. I've got a free course on staying healthy naturally during COVID. And I've got some instruction on rockings, doing foot soaks. So there's probably something for everyone on those sites.
Love it, Leslie. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast brought to you by GVOM, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at gvom.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.